Everyone has moments in life they just can't stop thinking about. Like that one time in middle school when you called your teacher mom. Yeah, that's not leaving your brain anytime soon. Or something amazing like the first time you really traveled and got to see how big and beautiful the world is. And on Baby, This is Keke Palmer, hosted by me, Keke Palmer, and presented by BMW, we know to savor the good memories and let go of the bad. And one thing everyone remembers fondly is their first time behind the wheel of a BMW. So come join me and BMW this summer as we explore pop culture moments and topics you just can't stop thinking about on Baby, This is Keke Palmer, sponsored by BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Before we get into the show, fun fact, this podcast was born out of a newsletter that we started way back in 2012. People really seem to like it, and we think you will too. It's a quick hit list of 10 things we've discovered recently that we love. Everything from recipes to beauty products to books to tools to truly anything that excites us. We send it every Monday. We do take some holidays off, and it's free. Sign up at athingor2hq.com. Here's the show. Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. If you want more where this came from and want to support us in general, head to athingor2hq.com and sign up for Secret Menu, which will be weekly access to members-only content.
To share your thoughts on this episode or anything at all, leave us a voicemail at 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at athingor2hq.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to tell you about something.
Please, Claire.
There's a new way that people are exchanging contacts since you and I have been out on the scene.
We closed our business in 2019, mm-hmm. and then we didn't leave our houses for a couple of years, and now mm-hmm. we've re-entered, and there's a whole new way.
No, we're on the circuit. We're running around. We're meeting people. And the thing that people do now, they don't do business cards, which had more or less
died.
Well,
we knew that. Yeah. I remember when the digital business card thing was really, it was trying so hard. They were trying to make fetch happen with those.
They were trying
dumb
to make
apps.
Fetch happen, and it would be like, you just bump your phone to the other person's phone, I'll exchange contacts.
Or gross.
Like, yeah. There were all these really silly startups around how you could digitally exchange information.
And then there was the QR code thing for a while. Just scan my QR code and add me to your contacts that way.
I certainly never did that because I didn't learn how to use a QR code until the pandemic.
Until we had to use it for menus during the pandemic.
Yeah. So, but I remember at the end of a Kind, we didn't have business cards. And the only employee that we bought business cards for was our buyer because she would have to go to trade shows and hand them out. Well, now what people do is they open up a blank email draft in their phone and then hand their phone to you. So you will put your email address and basically send an email to yourself from their phone.
Yes.
So then you have their email address, which can I tell you the first time it happened to me, I was so thrown. And the woman kept being like, I was like, what do I write? And she was like, you just put like nice to meet you or whatever in the subject line. And I was like, right, because I'm sending it to you. Like
the logic of it was all.
I was so confused. Yeah. I was like, am I receiving this email? What I ultimately realized was there's a bit of a power dynamic at play too, because it's if you are sending yourself the email from their phone, then it's on you to respond to it.
You're doing all the things.
Yeah. And then now, ever since I did that one time, it's happened a million times. I'm still confused by it every time, but pretty soon I'm going to just be
smooth
about
it. It's going to feel so natural. Here's the thing for me. I don't love holding other people's phones and touching other people's phones. Or just like touching is a weird word. Maybe
I was
going to
say, is this a germaphobe
thing
I didn't know about?
I feel like a weird responsibility holding someone's phone if like a text is going to come through or like a thing. You know what I mean?
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure there are people who don't do it this way for that reason.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of people are cagey about their phones. Even if there's nothing really to hide, it's just like my entire life is on this thing.
Right. Like, who knows what's going to pop up while I'm holding it is how I feel.
Exactly.
I don't like the responsibility of that.
Yeah.
It's a time bomb. I don't know.
It's a whole new world out there. I had no idea. It's also weird that this has emerged since the pandemic, or maybe before or during, but like certainly in the time since we've been on the scene. How many times am I going to say on the scene?
On the scene.
Maybe this is useful for our listeners. They won't be so caught off guard when it happens to them like I was that first time. It was a disaster.
They'll just handle it like total naturals. Like
that
total
person
naturals.
Who did it for me, who did it to me the first time, I emailed them back being like, nice to meet you. Let's catch up. She never responded. And it's probably why. She was so thrown by how awkward I was about the whole exchange. I have a question. Do you think people are doing this at bars? Like this is how it's happening in the dating scene?
Exchanging email addresses? No, I don't think that.
Well, but is it like send yourself a text message from me?
Yeah.
I hand my phone and I'm like, okay, put your number in and send yourself
and
a text
message. And
then say,
yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
It's still weird. I don't like that. I don't want that to happen in dating, but let us know if it is.
Something else we want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Speaking of being out on the scene, right, Claire? We went to an event recently at Peoplehood, which is the new business founded by Elizabeth Cutler and Julie Rice, a.k.a. the work wives behind SoulCycle.
Yeah.
And so this new business is doing these guided group conversation practices designed to improve your relationships, which, like, when I say that, it sounds like hippy dippy, woo woo, whatever. And certainly there's like a dusting of some of that, of course, because anything that's about vulnerability and sharing your feelings and sitting around with in a circle with a group of people is. But the experience itself didn't really feel that way and felt like also just like a natural outgrowth of SoulCycle.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It had major SoulCycle DNA in it. So the premise is what sort of what they say when they introduce this. They're like, the joke about SoulCycle is it turned out not to be about exercise at all. Like it was about community and connection and ritual. And so when you go into these peoplehood circles, they're sort it's not group therapy, but it's just sort of group connection and working through stuff. And so when you go in, the first thing they do are these breathing exercises that feel exactly like the type of thing you do at the top of a yoga lesson class or something like that.
Yes.
It's really interesting because we talk a lot about all of these new, I'm going to use a word here, new modalities.
Okay.
Therapy and all of this stuff and like things being a gateway drug. We've worked with BetterHelp forever and we always talk about how like this is a great opportunity for your friend who's like,
it's the entry point.
It's the entry point, right? This feels like one of those also where it's like, and it's not necessarily just therapy, but meeting people too, like making connections.
Totally. Julie Rice said in an article for the New York Times, it feels therapeutic, but it's not therapy. It's vitamins, not medicine, which felt like a very
vitamins,
good
not medicine.
Okay,
she's done this before.
Yeah. So after you do the breathing exercises, you're in this circle of like 15 to 20 people. Then you go around the circle and answer the question, how are you really doing? And it's led by someone who's like, you know, sort of cut from that SoulCycle instructor cloth. Someone that you're like, oh, you're cool. You get it. You're like in touch with yourself. You are here to bring us all together.
She sets the tone. She was like, cool. But she was like, I'm going to be vulnerable with you all.
I'm going to tell you a thing that's like actually happening in my life that I'm struggling with and have mixed feelings about. And then that will prompt you all to do the same and to like have the same, to bring the same energy basically. And then we broke off into pairs, you know, with the people sitting next to us and answered a question where we each had 2 minutes to answer it and each like took turns listening.
Yeah. That was a super interesting exercise and it has stuck with me in a big way. The instructor, the guide,
I don't know.
Is like, you know, listening's really hard. It's really hard not to interrupt and to suggest ideas. So for this, these 2 minutes, this person's going to share their story and you cannot say anything, nothing. The only thing you can say is there more? And they give you the prompt. And it's challenging. And it was also challenging talking and not having the person respond for that long. Did you find that too?
Yeah.
I had to keep reminding myself that she wasn't allowed to respond.
Yes.
Partner.
And talking for 2 minutes uninterrupted is a long time to speak.
Yeah.
It turns out.
Yeah.
And listening for 2 minutes and not responding is a long time to not respond.
I saw the funniest meme yesterday. I should have sent it to you. It really resonated. It was like, it's amazing how I spend my entire day like reliving awful things I said and being embarrassed about what came out of my mouth, and yet I never stop talking. And it's like, same. I mean, I do a fucking podcast, and yet I spend all day just being like, why did I say that?
Incredible. Anyway. No, perfect. Yeah. Absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. And then after this, you also close it out with some breathing exercises. Yeah.
Well, we also, before that, went around the circle and responded, you know, sort of gave shout outs or observations, right?
Yes. We gave shout outs or observations of things that people had said or shared that really resonated or things we wanted to come back to.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like a good use of 55 minutes or however long it was.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, so there were so many people who I was like, wow, I could really see XYZ in my life benefiting from it. One, I just, 24-year-old me, basically, yeah, lost in the city, new job, like trying to find my way, being like, what is a career? What do I want my career to be? And just being like, am I the only one who feels this way?
Well, and it's the first time in your life where you don't have a natural way of meeting friends and, yes, meeting people, where you've had school, mm-hmm, up until that point, and, yeah, now you don't. And, yeah, meeting people at work feels like a totally different situation, yes, than meeting people in a class or in a, mm-hmm, dorm or, you know, whatever, or in a sports team or whatever, however you were making friends before.
God, it would be such a good way to make friends, I think. I mean, yes, we met people at this thing. I really found it to be such a compelling way to meet new people. I also think about new moms.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think, listen, life stages, yeah, in general, like a new life stage where you feel like you're floundering, yeah, and you think it must just be you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing, which is personally how I think they're going to make their next $1 billion, is that they do this for companies. So you can bring your team in, which I'm just like, yes, every company wants this. We wanted this when we were running a company. It's hard to know who, what, how much it costs.
Who's the right person? Exactly, how are they going to format it?
Right. And that's where I'm like, it's the dry bar of this, right? Where it's like, you could always get a blowout, right? But you needed somebody to be like, this, like, here's the, like, very straightforward version of this, where you know what you're
going to get. Here's where you're
going
to go, where you know you're going to get a good blowout.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, this, especially with everybody being remote now, and it just feels, and just there being so many startups run by people who, like, aren't natural leaders or managers,
I mean,
or whatever.
Honestly, I think even just, you know, in general, the hybrid workforces, yeah, the people have, you know, who moved during COVID and now their teams that are just not connected in that way, yeah, at all. They've made new hires who live across the country. And this is an opportunity. And they also do this, like, digitally. You could do this with a team that's right across the country.
Totally.
And have an opportunity for people to actually engage around something other than small talk or work things.
Thank you so much to Skims for sponsoring today's episode. Ugh, Erica, you and I were, like, late to the Skims train, despite hearing about it constantly. And now we're, like, really, are we driving the train?
We're definitely in one of the, like, the sleeper cars. You know what I mean? We're, like, really on board.
It's absurdly comfortable. So the thing that I got, well, I got a couple of things, but one of the things that I really love is the Fitz Everybody racer back bralette, because you know how
you like a racer back. You like a racer back bralette.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, like, deeply addicted to a racer back tank year round. It's a year round thing for me because I like a racer back under a sweater because it's got a higher neck. And then summer,
peaks,
I like
it peaks.
It
better.
Peaks. And then in the summer, I'm all about a racer back, and you got to have the bra that's not peaking out of it. And that racer back,
right,
bralette is very good. And it's like, there's no seams. It's very comfy. Here's the thing about a racer back, especially if you're a migraine girly like me, you gotta be careful because it can really pull on the neck and the shoulders.
The pressure, the migraine triggers. Yeah,
yeah.
This one doesn't do it.
It doesn't do it because it's
a migraine
so soft.
Proof racer back bra. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Skims is a solution oriented brand creating the next generation of underwear, loungewear, and shapewear for everybody. The Fits Everybody collection of underwear are lightweight, form-fitting essentials. The buttery soft fabric molds to your body and stretches to twice its size. It's offered in a range of cuts and fits, from underwear and bras to dresses, t-shirts, and bodysuits. Love a bodysuit. Available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X and offered in 9 core colorways plus limited edition seasonal colors. Believe the hype. This collection has over 90,000 five-star reviews for a reason. Skims Fits Everybody and more best-selling essentials are available now at skims.com. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $75. All at skims.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Will Cole. As a leading functional medicine practitioner, I have had the unique position to see so many alchemize their pain and health problems to their purpose. Now I want the same for you. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers, where there is a fresh infusion of grace and lightness into wellness. This is the art of being well. Join me every Thursday for a new episode.
I know they also do a couples version of this. In your research, did you discover how, is it like couples group therapy?
Yeah, so it's called Couplehood, and it's up to 7 maybe couples. We talked to someone who had gone through that, and they, mm-hmm, said that it was just this really fascinating thing because you don't interact with couples in that way, mm, most of the time. Mm-hmm. And that feels very foreign. You might have, yeah, like a dinner party and chat, mm-hmm, with, I don't know, other couples or like friends, but not in a context where you're sharing things that are happening in your life and how you're dealing with them.
Yeah.
And that just felt very new.
Right.
The thing I can't stop thinking about when considering this business is what Elizabeth and Julie said about the connection piece of it, and that that is what SoulCycle ultimately was doing. They had no idea when they set out that that was going to be the thing, and that this is doing that too. And that just like we are in this place where we just like lack community in every aspect of our lives.
Yes.
We live online. The death of religion and civic and, you know, organizations and unions and the elimination of public spaces and all of this. And it just, it's making me feel like I should finally read the book Bowling Alone.
I don't know about this book. No.
So it's called Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community. It's a 2000 nonfiction book by this guy, Robert D. Putnam, that basically solidified all of these ideas of these community underpinnings, these places where we sought human connection are all eroded or eroding. And what do we do about that? And how do we fix that? And I think that this is something that people have been trying to solve in a million different ways since then. We've even had conversations about the way people like latched, you know, we talked recently about fandoms. We've talked with people about like horoscopes and the like rise of horoscope being something that people were trying to connect and be like, we're both Libras. And so what does that mean? It also made me think so much about this article that Amanda Mull wrote for The Atlantic on Bed Bath & Beyond closing, of all things.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. I'm going to read a kind of long part of it because I just thought it was so fucking good and it really just went a long way. So she's talking about the closing of Bed Bath & Beyond and a bunch of other of these like big box stores. The accumulating absences have left many malls and commercial corridors, especially those in more rural or less wealthy areas, to languish half vacant. And this has begun to eat away at one of the core structures of modern American life. That life is more satisfying when you can touch something before you buy it, when vendors near you sell things you might need at the last minute, when people in your community can gather in places to do the mundane errands and chores of living. These spaces are social and convivial, even if just minorly so. They require people to interact with strangers and contend with the messy realities of life alongside others. The centrality of these market spaces persists across time, geography, and culture, and it predates capitalism by millennia. No matter the economic system, for people to trade for things they can't do or make themselves, they need a common place. Whatever that place looks like where you live, it's important to your community's health. Bigger, better-known stores draw foot traffic to smaller stores and restaurants, all of which give greater visibility to other types of businesses nearby. These are areas where people go to work and walk around and spend their money, which are theoretically all things we want people to do in their daily lives, the kinds of things that, say, help set coherent community norms of how to act in public, or to let teenagers gather to try out adult behaviors such as buying their own clothes or having an unsupervised lunch with friends or applying for a job. This process is how people gain skill and confidence in navigating social interactions and the world at large. What I'm explaining here is just how a city or town works when it does, where jobs and opportunity come from, why people decide to move to a place, why they decide to stay. Whether Bed Bath & Beyond fails is, by itself, not going to break any particular city, but the larger trend that has helped it toward failure might eventually do exactly that. The more economic activity goes to e-commerce and just a few brick-and-mortar mega-retailers, the more that activity fades from public view. Instead, it's attended to by low-wage workers sequestered in warehouses or largely behind the scenes in big-box stores, by delivery drivers alone in their truck. What consumers get in return is convenience, or at least the semblance of it. Shop all you want without leaving your home. If you must go out, get everything you need in a single store. But as this new way of shopping becomes dominant, it also flattens out some of the social and physical texture of life. Regularly traversing the physical plane is pretty good for most people, even if it's just to buy groceries or replace your worn-out sheets. Convenience can provide only so much, and it alone is not a particularly worthy ultimate goal of human existence.
It's not to disagree with anything she's saying, but I do think you can imagine a world in which we would find ways to physically interact with people that aren't around consumption, right?
You like, can imagine a world, yes.
And it hypothetically, that's what emerges from this, because we do need human connection and interaction.
Yeah.
You know, whole other conversation around the Amazon of it all and the e-com of it all.
Yeah. I would like to pitch a celebrity memoir, because this podcast.
You love a celebrity memoir.
I love a celebrity memoir. I think our listeners do. I think Celebrity Book Club will cover this one. But in the meantime,
hope so.
Tell Me Everything, a memoir by Minka Kelly. I read a passed around galley that at least three friends of mine had read previously, which I feel like just sets the tone of this book. I knew nothing of Minka Kelly's life, and she had been pretty quiet about it up to this point. But it turns out her life was really fucking hard.
Can we also set that Minka Kelly was one of the leads in Friday Night Lights?
That's Lila Garrity,
how most of us know of her,
Lila
right?
Garrity in Friday Night Lights.
What
she's also in
she
Parenthood,
been?
And she's in Euphoria.
Oh, I didn't know either of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think because she played Lila Garrity and did a tremendous job of playing Lila Garrity, head cheerleader on Friday Night Lights, people have a sense that that is who she is in a lot of ways. And ultimately, she is much more Tyra Collette,
oh,
who is the blonde on Friday Night Lights. Mm-hmm. Her mom was a stripper when she was growing up, had addiction issues. She had very tenuous living situations mm-hmm. and circumstances. There were a lot of just sort of people in and out of her life, and she really struggled to get her footing. It's probably not fair to say she like fell ass backwards into acting, but it wasn't.
Yeah, how did she get into acting?
She was sort of pushed into modeling, then was like getting some commercials, okay. and then was started doing some acting classes, and then was like, oh, and then had an acting instructor uh-huh. who basically was like, you're so not in touch with your emotions and you fall back on these like very specific ways of responding to things because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that forced her to really treat acting class, like early acting classes, probably a little bit like therapy, but mm-hmm. then to like actually go deep into therapy as a result this. But yeah, like I think the early acting classes were like a way of kind of getting to know herself and work through some of the stuff that was really hard for her. The prologue of this book opens with her doing a peep show at 17 to save money to get her own place. Mm-hmm. Because at that point she's living with a boyfriend and the boyfriend's like dad and brother. And there is a bit in this prologue about how the other woman who's doing the peep show with her, who has zero interest in like being friendly or mm-hmm. supportive or helpful or like anything, is picking out Anita Franco songs to play for their performance.
Uh-huh.
And you just immediately get the vibe that like, okay, like this person is going, this is going to be real talk. She's mm-hmm. going to like tell me like what's really happened mm-hmm. in her life. And she knows how to paint a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of like goes on from there.
Do you think she wrote it herself?
I think it's so hard to know. Okay, here's what I'll say. I think she has done a lot of therapy of all kinds. You really get a lens into that and you get a picture into the way that she's worked through things over time. And she definitely like, she's honest about how shitty people in her life were to her,
mm-hmm.
but also how much they were doing the best they could,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty specific and magical balance to hit. She does talk about Tim Riggins.
Right, because it turns out she dated him in real life. And this was like a big reveal. Nobody knew this until now.
There was like, I think there'd been like a nod to it in the past, but this is like definitely the first time that it's been talked about in any great detail. And basically any of the chemistry you see in Friday Night Lights is real because they were definitely effing. But then when they broke up, she handled it pretty, I don't know. She just like, okay, this is like a sort of a taste of, this is a taste of their breakup.
Mm-hmm.
I'd show up to work with a smile on my face thinking I was being professional while everyone else felt sorry for the guy whose heart had just been broken. My coworkers weren't taking me out for drinks after work to mend my broken heart. They were taking him out. Vulnerability begets connection, as evidenced by the outcome of both our coping mechanisms. My tough guy approach only left me alone. If you behave as if you need no one, if no one around you knows any better, most certainly no one will, in fact, be there.
So she hadn't done enough therapy at this point to realize that.
Correct.
Okay. She's only realizing it in retrospect.
Exactly.
Got it. I didn't watch Friday Night Lights. I've seen like a couple episodes.
I know.
So
and listen,
I didn't
I
watch Peoplehood or Euphoria.
Yeah.
So
what's your understanding of her or your
Well,
interest in
I
her?
See her on Instagram because I think she's in a gal group that I follow some of the people. Like she seems to have a very tight knit lady friend group. So I see that. And then she dated Trevor Noah, which I was very interested in because I think he's a lot of sex appeal.
Yeah. No, a lot of people, he's not, I don't know why he doesn't, he's not for me particularly, but.
Gosh, that face. And
he has a very coy smile.
It's a good face. He's a good accent. He's not like someone I'm like super pining for, but when he's
not Bill Hader.
Not Bill Hader. He's not, you know, my new one's Alexander Skarsgård. That's the one where I'm like, oh my God.
I'm sorry. That's super my type and not yours. I'm so intrigued.
Everybody's type.
Okay,
he's so
true.
Hot. He's really doing it for me in Succession because he's so good. More recently, and I should have checked up to see if this was still happening, but she's dating the lead singer from Imagine Dragons.
I think that's still happening.
Who is so hot.
Like, yeah, you sent me
absurdly
you sent
hot.
Me like a concert shot.
Yeah,
of,
I sent
of
you
him
some concert
taking
footage.
His shirt off.
I unabashedly love Imagine Dragons. Like it's kind of cheesy.
You like running music.
It's great running music. It is the best workout music. Thunder, what a bop. Does she discuss it?
No, she doesn't. The last like boyfriend she discusses by name is Taylor Kitsch, aka Tim Riggins.
Oh my God. Like from like 20 years ago, we're talking? 15.
Yeah.
10.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think at that point, it's maybe just about like not airing the dirty laundry of a bunch of other
of
relationships.
That's kind.
But she talks about plenty of things she's gone through. You don't feel like, what am I getting from this book if I'm not getting this gossip at all?
Yeah. It's not to me more like being like, I lost my virginity to so-and-so and
Oh, I mean, there's definitely talk of her virginity.
No, but to me, more named names. Remember that? And then everybody had to like be on, was like caught on their back foot being like, well, I didn't know I was taking her virginity or whatever.
Of course. Yes, yes, yes. I think it is tonally similar to the Demi Moore Inside Out book for sure, which was also a great celebrity
memoir.
I
just forgot she named it after a Disney movie.
Well, which came first? You could have been working on the book for a long time, Claire. You will know.
Yeah. Pixar is like, we were there first.
But this is definitely one of the best celebrity memoirs I've read in a long time, and I want people's thoughts.
Okay. All right, maybe I'll listen to it.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. One of the conversations that I've been like having a lot lately is chatting with friends and, you know, just like kind of being like a default sounding board for certain friends and family members, which is like a role I like playing of just, you know, like I'm here to hear what you're going through. But there does get to be a certain point where you're like, this is like above my pay grade. Like I'm not the person to help you solve this or work through this, because it's like not even problem solving that we're trying to do. It's like work through these feelings you're having, or this like struggle you're in, or this like place that you just like can't break free of, this like grief or depression or whatever, you know, anxiety. Yeah. And I can be like a person to be like, hey, let's do a thing to get you out of the house or whatever. But I can't be a person to help guide you through this process, because I am not licensed. And you deserve that. And you deserve that. You know what I mean?
Truly, truly.
You deserve that. And that is like, I don't know. I feel like being able to be like, hey, have you thought about talking to someone else is like the place that to go at those moments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's also just sometimes you need like someone who doesn't know you. You need kind of a stranger. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/athingortwo today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/athingortwo. BetterHelp.com/athingortwo.
You know, if you like this podcast, you will definitely like Bad on Paper. And if you like our conversations about romance on this podcast, you will super, super like Bad on Paper. The hosts of this chat show, Becca Freeman and Olivia Mentor, are like huge romance rom-com fans. They even did a recent episode on sort of like niche erotica and did reviews of that, which I feel like is like, I don't know, that's like the next train for us.
Yeah.
Next,
oh, yeah. Like, we got to start reading the Goblin erotica.
Totally. Totally. New episodes drop every Wednesday. They are huge readers and they talk about books on every single episode. So if you're just feeling like you need book recs that aren't coming at you on TikTok or whatever, this is a place to get them. And listeners say that it just feels like having a glass of wine with your best friends, which I think is just like the ultimate review for a chat show.
Truly.
You know, what is better than that?
Yes.
Both hosts are also currently writing books, so they give you updates on that process in case that's curious and interesting for you. And there's a huge back catalog, so you don't have to feel like, oh, I got to start at the beginning or anything like that. Just, you know, try the erotica one, see how it goes, whatever.
It's a classic you may also like situation. If you like this, you may also like that. Let's get it going.
Let's get it going. Listen to Bad on Paper.
I see here in your notes that we're glossing over that she also dated John Mayer and Chris Evans.
Oh yeah, Chris Evans, John Mayer, Derek Jeter, Jesse Williams, Trevor Noah. You know what I was grateful for? Here's something I was really grateful for. I was so grateful that she did not spill any ink on John Mayer, because that man, I
don't know. I feel like it would have added to like expanded the canon of like
of people talking shit on John Mayer in their memoirs because he deserves it.
Yes. Or in their songs.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I basically was like, he doesn't deserve it.
I have another TV show thing that I wanted to talk about. I don't think these TV shows overlapped. Again, I don't.
I don't think they did.
Did you watch Seventh Heaven?
Never intentionally.
Yeah, I feel like that was probably my relationship with it too. Do you know about its revival right now?
No.
I should say, just to get out of the way, there was a lot of attention brought to it a couple years ago because it turned out that the dad was like a pedophile, I think. And
it's the actor, not the character.
Exactly. Which brings me to the thing is that there's this TikTok meme now, hashtag unhinged Seventh Heaven, because all these people are rewatching it and being like, this show is fucking insane, because there's all of these insane scenes, including one where Jessica Biel's character,
Mary,
Mary.
Which I just, every time my brain cannot, it cannot go there. It can't make the leap, but go on.
She's losing her focus because she wants to have her first kiss and she needs to just get her first kiss out of the way okay. so that she can focus on her basketball. Uh-huh. And she is lamenting this to her older brother, the hot one, the one with the long hair. I don't sure. know his name.
Why is she talking to her older brother about this? Just because that's how this show is.
Save your why. Okay. Because the why is, why does she propose to her brother that she just practice on him?
What?
To get it out of the way. And so this is the first scene that, like, I think
Claire
kicked off this series of people so being like, what
they
do, wrong
so they are, they kiss
I think
on the
they
show.
Don't ever actually kiss. They're about to kiss, and the dad walks out to take out the trash and is like, what the fuck are you two doing?
Right.
But she keeps being like, oh, if I could just kiss a boy, then I could quit thinking about it and concentrate on my game. Could you just show me?
This is deranged.
And then later, probably several seasons later, the mom and the dad are talking about how all their kids are fucked up and where did they go wrong. And they flash back to the scene where the kids are about to kiss, being like, was that where we went wrong? That our kids were kissing each other? What was wrong with this show? There's another one where Lucy, the younger sister, who's the actress's name is Beverly, which I could never forget.
Yeah.
Is in labor. And Matt, Matt's the hot guy.
Matt,
with the long hair.
Yeah, sure.
The older brother is in the delivery room with her and the husband. And the husband goes, you better not be looking at my wife. And the brother goes, I'm a doctor. And the husband goes, but you're her brother. And Matt again says, I'm a doctor. And the brother goes, I hope that doesn't mean what I think it means.
What does that mean?
I don't know. This is some pop culture that's not serving me at all. And so I needed you to also have to deal with this being in your head now that this is where we are.
Where are people watching Seventh Heaven? Do we know?
Great question. You would have thought it would have gone the way of the Cosby Show after that dad went on.
You
TV
would have, like, Step by Step.
Yeah, oh God, I would absolutely watch Step by Step again if that were streaming.
You would not.
Oh,
would
yes, I would.
You would watch one episode and you would be like,
you're right, this, probably.
What is happening? Let's get this going.
Oh my God, I loved that show. Step by step, day by day. Okay, I got something new I wanted to tell you about. I think you should get it. We were just talking to this about how we're all the things that you always would hear older women say, this is what happens when you turn 40. They're all happening. Like, my skin is getting drier,
yes,
this and that and whatever. Also, I'm getting...
I don't have a memory anymore.
Yes.
It's like between us, we have two-thirds of memory.
Yeah, that's plenty.
Yeah.
One of the things that is happening is random hairs come... Like, I can't... I'm playing whack-a-mole with them.
I feel like that started at like 30.
Oh, it did.
I feel like at our 30th birthdays, we were like... Yeah. Wow, what's
but it really,
this and why does it keep coming back?
Yes, absolutely. The pace increased exponentially in around like 36, 37,
yeah,
I would
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
The only way I find them, because I, A, don't have great eyesight, B, don't have great lighting in my bathroom. The only way I'm finding them is if Chris points them out.
Yeah, no, I understand.
When you go into a hotel that has really aggressive bathroom lighting. And, like,
and then
maybe
you're like, I look like
this
all the time and
exactly.
I have no idea.
You're like, I fully have a mustache.
Yeah.
And I had no clue.
No one told me.
And I like, in some ways, walking around in bliss. Like, I don't want to be dealing with it all the time.
Listen, people's eyes are not a magnifying mirror.
Yeah.
We don't, like, need to be,
I kind of feel whatever. I just, it's one of those things where I'm deeply vain, but I can't be vain about things that I'm not aware of. So I just,
can't
I'm like,
see
happy.
It. How
yeah,
could you know?
Exactly. Yeah. But then I was like, it was getting to the point where I was like, it's honestly just too much to keep. It's truly whack-a-mole. And I'm sick of being like, well, I finally got that one hair out. And now there's this other one that's not long enough now. You know, whatever. You know the drill.
Oh, I do. I do.
You're like, God, I got to wait, but I can like feel it and I can't
but
stop
But how am I going to remember? Because I
exactly.
can't remember anything. Just, like,
well,
check
you'll
back
remember because if you're like me, you can't stop like thumbing
yeah.
it. Being like, there's that little one right there.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like having to clip my
like
nails.
Like on this mole.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I was like, I think I'm going to shave my face. I think I'm going to start doing that because that might be like
yeah.
the only answer. Because the other thing that's happened is that the peach fuzz has gotten more intense.
Yeah.
And I have a number of friends, both real friends and people who I follow on the internet who I don't
sure.
know,
yeah.
who love face shaving. And they're like, no, you got to try it. Like, it doesn't grow back weird. It's actually really great. Your makeup goes on smoother. Your face is so smooth. It's great.
How are they shaving?
I think you just put on lotion. And then there's these little razors that don't, to me, look like men's razors, although I don't know what the difference is.
Okay.
The ones that I have seen are, it's one stick with a little razor.
I have one of those
yeah,
that so I use sometimes.
You
but
do?
I don't, But I don't like put cream on or anything. I just...
You just do it on dry skin?
Yeah, but like really only like around... Yeah.
Okay, so...
My mouth, sometimes
how
my
often
chin.
Do you do it?
Gosh, I'd have to remember, you know?
So I think the reason I've been so hesitant is because I had such a traumatic relationship with shaving my entire life. Like I just had... My body hair is so coarse and thick that shaving would always... I would have to do it constantly. It would never result in actually smooth skin. I was constantly getting razor burn and ingrowns. Then at one pivotal moment in my life, I got laser hair removal and I was like, great, I'm done with shaving. I'm never doing it again. So the idea of getting into a new relationship with shaving is quite daunting to me. I don't want to do it. Even though everyone has said, it's not the same. It's fine.
It's not the same. Stubble. Yeah, and you're also not, it's not like, it's just not the density. It's a different experience.
Totally.
Anyway, you have a better solution, I think.
Well, I don't think it's better. I think I'm going to shave too. I think I'm going to try it. I'll report back. While I was searching for these shavers, I came across this thing. It is called the Tweezerman Smooth Finish Facial Hair Remover.
And smooth finish. Great. Okay.
You know, and here's what I'm going to say. Like, I mean, it's not giving you an unsmooth finish, but it feels to me like an interim step before shaving.
Yeah.
What it is it's so wild. I had no idea how it was going to work, but I had read the reviews and everybody was like, this thing works. So I'm going to try it. So it's a very tight metal coil.
Yeah. Like a spring.
Into a U. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Bent into a U shape with handles on either side. And then between the coils and the handles, there are these little almost like casters, like these little like metal things that twist. So what you do is you grab the handles, you drag the coil across your face while twisting these little casters.
Oh.
So that, and what that does is it makes the coil a little bit tighter as you're dragging it. So it grabs the hairs and pulls them out.
So it's like threading almost.
Yeah, and I've never had threading, but everybody in the comments says it's threading, basically.
Yeah.
And what I like about it is I'm like, cool, I'm doing this. It hurts a little bit. It's not shaving. It's getting like
stuff. It's tweezing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very quick. It's a little bit painful, but not to me enough to be a deterrent. And I felt like it was getting a lot of the stuff that I wouldn't otherwise see. It's not going to get the ones we're talking about that are like the really coarse hairs where you're like, I don't think it will get those. Maybe it will. I don't know. I had already tweezed those. But I felt like this was a really good, like, okay, I can do this every couple of days. Just drag it across and it'll get, like, the fine, like, weird hairs.
I think this is smart.
I mean, very smart. I couldn't believe how well it works.
I mean, this is, like, the difference between, you know, shaving, you're not getting the root of anything. So you're not buying yourself as much time.
That's what I liked about it. As I said, very fraught relationship with shaving. This felt like, okay, it's more like waxing.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think everybody should try it. I couldn't believe how effective it was and how just like easy it felt. I don't know. But I welcome people's thoughts on shaving their faces and their tips on it. You know why else too?
Huh.
I've been dragging my feet about shaving face. Do you know what they always say to little girls who want to shave their legs where they're like, once you start, you can't stop. So you like,
I don't think that's true with this.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about it. I'm going to do it. And if you see me out and I have like weird hairs, just know that I can't see them myself.
Trust that I don't know their hair.
Trust I don't know. Trust it's not intentional. You know what I'm never going to do?
Huh.
I say a year from now, I'll be talking about how I love Jolene bleach, but like I don't ever want to have to bleach stuff.
It just feels too annoying. It doesn't feel like it's solving the problem to me.
Seems so annoying.
Yeah. I just don't really engage with bleach in general, and I'd like to keep it that way.
You mean like as a cleaning product?
Yeah. I kind of steer clear of it. I don't think anybody's ever taught me how to use bleach.
Yeah.
And certainly it's something I could learn on my own, but that seems like a heavy lift.
I'm quite intimidated by it as a chemical substance.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a scene in romantic comedy, the new Curtis Sittenfeld book, where basically the woman's like driving to meet the male lead. And before she hits the road, she bleaches her mustache. And I was just, and you know, well, she's doing all the things. She shaves,
she's
bleaching her mustache. And it was a real record scratch moment for me. It was like, oh, because she's meant to be our age. Like it takes place at a very specific time and it tracks. She's our age and like, oh, are we bleaching? I thought that was something our moms did. I don't know.
I think people take different approaches. I think there are a lot of angles on this.
It's true.
A lot of angles on this. Intriguing.
I just want everyone to laser. I mean, I know not everybody can, those blondies.
Well, listen, also, your laser was way more effective than mine.
Yeah, no,
I have to shave
but
my
this,
armpits.
That was the reward I got for
having coarse dark hair. And
grown up
I have fine dark hair and thus am a worse candidate.
I know. It would be like covered
if
by
men wanted
insurance.
Smooth legs.
Yeah, I just, you know, and if you don't shave or remove or any of your body hair, more power to you, really.
Congrats.
Yeah, good for you.
I have a trick.
Mm.
this is my seasonal trick, making tulips last.
There are so many tricks about this.
Right. There are so many. Put a penny in the vase.
Doesn't
work
for me.
Put a vodka.
You know what? You want to know about the penny in the vase?
Tell me.
I don't think I've ever told you this.
Oh my God.
It's good.
I'm excited.
One, the penny in the vase never works for me, but two, I will always try it. And last year, my favorite home appliance broke for like a second or third time. My favorite home appliances are garbage disposal. And it was like such a drama. And we definitely had to get the plumber out to deal with it. And eventually the culprit was revealed. And it was that there was a penny in the garbage disposal. Because when emptying the vase,
Claire,
that had the tulip water in it, I had just chucked the penny right into the garbage disposal.
Absolutely.
So that's
not
why I will no longer be doing the penny in the tulip water.
I have something to tell you about the penny in the tulip water.
Yeah.
I'm like delighting in what your response is going to be. Mm-hmm. So this is from Southern Living. The reason pennies are considered a smart way to keep flowers alive longer is because copper is a fungicide, so it naturally kills off those pesky bacteria and fungi. Okay.
But pennies aren't made of copper anymore.
Pennies minted before 1982
yeah. uh-huh.
were made of 95% copper, uh-huh. while pennies we use now, those made after 1982, are made of 97.5% zinc yeah. and then like paint given.
Yeah.
Basically,
of course, because copper's very expensive.
So basically, in order mm-hmm. for this to work,
your penny has to be super old.
You have to source a 40-year-old penny.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. If I had thought that through, I could have gotten there on my own, actually.
I mean,
yeah.
But why is this trick being passed around still?
Yeah, because it's ridiculous.
Who's looking to see if they have a 40-year-old penny? I mean, this is just not a way. This is not a system.
What is the other? Is vodka? That vodka is just like flowers in general. That's not a
That's flowers in general, and that's to for the killing yeah. the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this has nothing to do with killing anything. Okay. Congrats to us.
Yeah.
So basically, you, with tulips, you poke a hole mm-hmm. near the base of the flower in the stem with...
So like high up,
close to that little yeah. flowers,
yeah.
basically the flower's neck,
yeah. Yeah.
as it were, with like a safety pin, a paper clip, mm-hmm. a toothpick, a whatever. Because apparently, according to a gardener named Daisy Payne, usually when they hit the water, air bubbles rise up the stem, blocking the water from reaching the flower head. And that's what causes them to droop. And the hole basically lets the like air escape.
That makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. You know what it also does? It makes a massive difference. You know how you put tulips in a vase and
yeah.
like the next day they're all.
Yes, I do
yes,
know that.
Heads down.
Yeah.
And not anymore, Claire.
That's great.
Not anymore. I mean, eventually they do. And yeah. I think eventually it looks chic, but not the yeah. day that you buy them at yeah. the grocery store and you're like, oh, I'm going to treat myself to this thing. I've had great success with 3 different bouquets, and it wow. has made me excited to buy tulips, which I've always felt
yeah,
like a little
like
bit
they're
like,
gonna go away.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
What's the thing?
Okay,
yeah.
all right.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I came across this juice company the other day. I truly have not the slightest how I stumbled upon it. It's just a juice company. It's based in the UK. I think basically it was a go-to for bars to order for mixers, mm-hmm. and then they decided that they wanted to also have a consumer-facing business.
Yeah, they went from B2B to B2C.
That's right. Well, B2B and B2C. I think
yeah.
they have both.
Uh-huh.
And their only real differentiator that is that they ship their juice at truck temp, so you can store it at room temp and waste less watts of refrigeration.
I mean, which is huge, which is really yeah. huge.
But they are very clear about that being their only differentiator.
That's not true. They have another differentiator.
Well, it's their copywriting, but their whole vibe of their copywriting is like, we're just juice. We're not offering you anything else. Their tagline is extraordinary, extremely online juice. And that, like, the copywriting is so good. Here's a product description for the apple juice. Thousands of apples come together to create a supercharged regular apple flavor. Shake for peak normal flavor. I just love it. Our cranberry juice embodies everything we love about cranberry juice. Cranberries. I just wanted to play a game with you to close out this episode.
Perfect. Great.
I'm going to read you the tagline for each of these juices and you see if you can guess which juice it is.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm ready.
A co-founder of Pina Colada goes solo.
Pineapple.
Nailed it. A blind taste test we're fairly certain you'd ace.
Orange.
Grapefruit.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
The pronunciation is debatable. The fact that it tastes good, less so.
Tomato.
Nailed it. I think this one's a little off though because does everybody like tomato juice?
I
feel like that's up for debate too.
Yeah, that's
tomato
true.
Juice is weird.
That's true. That's true.
A juice too cool to try to be anything it's not. It's also later described as normcore.
Orange?
Cranberry. Cranberry juice is what they label normcore.
Wait, cranberry juice is normcore?
Yeah, no, I don't get it either, okay. but I like it. I embrace it.
Okay, yeah, totally. Sure.
Put the morning on the map. alternately described as it is what it is.
I mean, okay, so now I get orange.
Yes, yeah. Now you get orange.
Finally.
This one you will also get. The juice at the top of every juice drinker's alphabetized list.
Apple.
Nailed it.
Oh my gosh, great.
Congratulations to Eager Juice. I just absolutely love your copywriting.
I mean, so good. That's the show.
That's the show.
This has been a production of Dear Media, and we are so grateful to the talented team over there for helping us make this podcast happen, especially to our wonderful producer, Allie Slice. You can follow us on Instagram at @athingortwoHQ, and if you have ideas for our show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingortwoHQ.com. Find show notes and sign up for our newsletter at athingortwoHQ.com too. If you love the show, consider supporting it by signing up for a secret menu also at athingortwoHQ.com.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.